Talk with Key Long West Talk Radio. Okay, here we are. Sorry, just making an adjustment here. We're into Key West Lou, Tuesday Talk. It's been an exciting week. We're going to talk about some of the things which occurred. If you wish to join me in the conversation, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. The number is also on the screen in front of you on your television set. Television set, good luck. On your internet, I'm sorry. I have not been drinking. Okay, I want to talk about the Boston bomber. The one that's presently caught, his 26-year-old brother was shot in the gun battle. The 19-year-old brother has been arrested. He is in the hospital in somewhat serious condition. He has been shot up. He cannot speak, except barely, they said today. He is being questioned. He's responding by writing his answers. Once he was able to gurgle out a soft and quiet no. It's questionable. He may be a paraplegic. He is heavily medicated. And what more can I tell you? This guy is in trouble physically. Let's forget what he did. What he did, I only want to talk about how he is right now. This is an open and shut case. When the government prosecutes this young man, 19 years old, it's hard to lose. It's the kind of a case that when I was practicing law, we said a kid out of law school can win this case. I am not minimizing the situation, nor maximizing how easy it is. The reason I say this is because, look, you don't have to be a lawyer to understand what I am suggesting. You have all those videos. These two guys are on camera. They're seen walking. They're carrying the stuff on their shoulders. They see them putting the bags down. They see the 19-year-old that's presently in the hospital and under arrest, playing with his cell phone in his hand, waist high, looking down at it. Probably, I'm assuming, and I believe the authorities are assuming, that this was somehow operated by the cell phone and the bomb went off. Easy case. They can only screw it up. They can only screw it up. And this is what bothers me, and this is what worries me. He was arrested on Friday. He was not taken before a judge until Monday, some 60 hours later. The rules of the game are that you've got to be taken before a judge immediately or within a reasonable time. A reasonable time in this case would have been Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Monday's a long way off. You can say, well, he was sick in the hospital. I don't buy that because while he's been in the hospital over the weekend, he's been questioned by federal authorities. And if he's able to answer questions, he can respond to a judge. Guilty or not guilty. He's a United States citizen. He's been here for about 10 years. He's been a citizen for a while. And we must remember he's a citizen. And as a citizen, he's entitled to all the constitutional protections available to a United States citizen. No ands, or buts about it. I mean, people sit back in this country and they yell and scream, I've got a Second Amendment constitutional right to carry a gun. It must be protected. Well, everyone in this country who's a citizen has a constitutional right, if they are arrested, to be brought before a judge immediately, to be advised they can remain silent, that anything they say can and will be used against them, that they have a right to counsel. And if they cannot afford one, one will be provided free. These are what we call the Miranda rights that you read so much about in the paper this week. In 1966, because of police abuses, which were rampant in this country in the previous 50 years, the Supreme Court of the United States says, we got to stop this. Where we arrest somebody, we don't bring them before a judge right away. We keep them in jail or incognito someplace for 3 or 4 days. We question the hell out of them, maybe subject them to a little brutality until we get a confession. Then we bring them before the judge when we got our case all locked up. When we don't tell them they have to remain quiet. We don't tell them they have a right to an attorney, because this was never spelled out as the Supreme Court did in the Miranda case in 1966. It is basic law. He is entitled to these safeguards just as every one of you and I who are American citizens. You can't take it away from him. Now, the federal authorities say, well, there is an exception. Not only the federal authorities, the Congress of the United States. I'm sick of hearing United States senators and congressmen saying, the Miranda rule does not apply here. There is the protect the public safety exception, the public safety exception. I have to concede, I was a lawyer for 50 years. I'm still a lawyer, but I don't practice any longer. I never heard of the public safety exception, but there is one. And what it means is, if there is an imminent threat of other bombs in this case, he may be questioned, that 19-year-old in the hospital, he may be questioned without giving him the right to counsel, without telling him of his right to counsel, without telling him of his right to remain silent, without taking him before a judge immediately, because, you know, if the bombs are going to go off someplace else, we want to know so people don't get killed. The problem is the authorities can only question him as to other bombs and other things that might have been done, which would result in an explosion someplace or someone, other people being maimed or killed. They cannot discuss anything else about the case with him. Where did they get the materials? Where did they buy them? How did they learn about them? Did they sit down with Al-Qaeda? Did the older brother sit down with Al-Qaeda when he went back to Chechnya for 6 months? Did they meet in a cell with anyone in the United States? Who else knew about this? Can't do that. That's against the rules. Now, they've been questioning this guy from day one, from what I can gather, even though he was in a difficult way. Not good, because if they did it and they did it wrong, at some point, some court's going to protect this guy and say you violated his Miranda rights. Because if something comes from a bad fruit that hangs on a tree, a rotten piece of fruit, and if they violate the law, that's rotten fruit, everything that follows sucks. They can't use it. Okay, now, what's happening with this guy? I question whether his rights have been violated. Very seriously, this is a serious issue. The other thing is, who's been questioning him? I love hearing Senator Lindsey Graham. I love hearing Congressman, whatever his name is from the island there, Kelly, and other congressmen and senators who say, we do not want the U.S. Attorney. We do not want the FBI questioning him. We want the intelligence people questioning him. Well, I think this is stupid. I think this is arrogant. I think it's ridiculous. You think the FBI does not know how to question people. They do it for their whole careers. And I will tell you from experience that with my clients, they do it very effectively. These people know what they are doing. The U.S. attorney's involved. You've got the best of the best on this case to prosecute this man, this 19-year-old. You think they're inept? They don't know what they're doing. Now, where are we going to get these intelligence people? Guantanamo? Where do they exist? I don't know. I didn't know we had a cadre of intelligence interrogators. And when I think about it, it dawns on me, maybe they're going to come from Guantanamo. They know how to do it. This fellow's a Muslim that they've got in the hospital in New York. What are they going to do? As was done in Guantanamo, take menstrual blood or blood and spread it on his body and tell him that's the blood from a woman's menstrual cycle. or are they going to take all his clothes off and leave him bare ass in the bed so he's embarrassed? Are they going to violate his Muslim religious sensitivities? Because that's what we learned that they did down in Guantanamo. Or are these going to be CIA men who are going to ask questions? I can't believe the Guantanamo people, CIA, or any of these other intelligentsia are any sharper than the U.S. attorneys and the FBI to question. So why muck up this case again and bring in people that you normally do not bring into a prosecution? This is a prosecution of a United States citizen in a federal court in the United States for a crime committed in the United States. It's just the same as if he had robbed a grocery store. I'm talking about he gets all the same privileges and rights, whether it's a big crime or a little crime. He qualifies, he's a citizen. The deed was done here in this country. What more do we need? Okay, so he finally was taken before a judge. He wasn't taken before the judge. The judge came to him to his hospital bed because, again, he can't be removed from the hospital. He's drugged. He can't talk. He's got to write responses. And so the judge comes in. This is not uncommon in the criminal law in this country. If a defendant can't come to the judge because of physical incapacity, the judge goes to the hospital room and meets with the defendant. He still must be given his rights immediately, and that's where the judge goes. But the judge didn't go to Monday. He got arrested Friday, more than 60 hours previous to the time the judge appeared before him. Now, I am sure that while they were arraigning him, they had video cameras. They had a court stenographer taking the words down on one of the shorthand machines. They recorded the questions and answers and anything anyone said, because all this is going to come up, mark my words, at some time down the road when his attorneys, his 19-year-old attorneys, make a motion questioning whether his Miranda rights were violated because of the questioning that went on up until Monday when he got a lawyer, Monday afternoon in front of with the judge there, went beyond whether there was an imminent threat, danger to people in the United States. Now, he finally got counsel at the time the judge was there. Let me tell you about the lawyer he's got. He has a heavy hitter. He has an excellent attorney. His attorney is Miriam Conrad. Miriam Conrad. She's nobody's fool. She is a public defender. She has been a public defender for 20 years. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School. She defended, remember the shoe bomber? His name was Reed. I forget his first name. She defended him. She has a reputation of being tough and provides a vigorous defense to defendants of this nature. She's very experienced. She has had capital cases before, capital cases where we're going to execute the person if they're found guilty. And, of course, this 19-year-old is charged with utilizing a weapon of mass destruction to kill. A weapon of mass destruction, the bomb that he and his brother apparently made. She's a pro at this. She's going to give him a hard time to the United States government, very simply because that is her job, that is her responsibility, and she's going to do her job and perform her responsibility to the best of her ability and within all the proper confines of the law. Now, at this arraignment, at his bedside in the hospital Monday afternoon, there were two other attorneys who actually were with them at the time of the arraignment. One is Timothy Watkin, the other is William Fitch. Both of these gentlemen have been public defenders a long time. Both have experience in these type cases. Marion Conrad said she wants two more attorneys to be added to her staff who have death penalty experience. Because death penalty cases are convoluted. They're difficult to handle because, one, they're serious. You lose, you're fine to die. But the other thing is there's all sorts of rules to protect now the defendant in a death penalty case, that you need someone who's been through the ballgame I've had somebody who's had the experience at least once, hopefully more, to defend these people. So that's what's going on right now. My concern, again, is that the question is going to come up, I guarantee it. And this Miriam Conrad's going to put it this way. She's going to take the position that some, he was questioned on things that went beyond whether an imminent threat situation, an imminent threat situation. And if that's the case, this other information, it was improper to question him in that fashion. His Miranda rights were violated. And any evidence that comes from these improper questions, by the way, that's going to be rejected by the court also. And if the court throws these things out, the federal government does not have the strong case that it had at the beginning of Friday, because they will have blown it. And she's going to raise it all. And she's going to say, when they question, he should have had an attorney. He should have been brought before a judge sooner. He should have been told he had a right to remain silent. I guarantee you he was not told this until Monday afternoon. He did not have to answer questions. So that's how I see this ball game playing out. Let me say this too. This Miriam Conrad, this public defender, she's got one tough case, regardless of what's going on. I'm talking about technical deficiencies that do come up in these cases. These issues, as I have framed them, will come up in this case down the road. I'm not saying she'll be successful, but they're going to come up and create the danger that the government may have blown something. She's got a tough job, because they said a kid out of law school could try this case and convict him. You've got all these video pictures, you've got the telephone thing, you got them putting the bag down, you got them, they'll know before this is over where he and his brother bought the materials for the cook pot and anything else that was used. They will know. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for her to win. And if she loses, he dies. It's the death penalty. So the best she can do for him, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is save him from the death penalty. She's got to make some kind of a deal where he's going to go to jail for life without possibility of parole. Life without possibility of parole, in my opinion, at this early stage, that's the best she can come out of this thing for him. And if she does anything less, I'll be impressed. And I won't be unimpressed if he still gets the death penalty. This is one tough case. But again, my point is he must be given his rights. He's an American citizen. And if you let the government deny him all his rights, they're going to deny your rights and my rights someday in another matter. That's how it works. Okay, staying with this. By the way, if you want to call and talk with me, the number is 646-478-5731. This is interesting stuff. The media this week, television, newspapers, the internet, magazines, many of the writers and many of the talk show people refer to this 19-year-old bomber as a boy. B-O-Y, that's a boy, 19 years old. He's not a boy, he's a man. I'm assuming in Massachusetts, the age for majority when you become an adult is 18. If it wasn't, we would have heard about it by now. So now he's an adult under the law. He's an adult in every respect. He can get married. He can go to war for his country. He's in the United States citizen. He can, let's assume he's in the military, okay? He's 19 years old. He can go play for the United States. He didn't, but he could. My point that I'm trying to make is we have 19-year-old men and women fighting for our country in Afghanistan and Iraq with the male part of this. The male part of the military, we always refer to them as men. Men, they are fighting military people. They are men. We never refer to our 19-year-old soldiers, our 18-year-old soldiers, our 20-year-old soldiers as boys. Now, why are we hearing boy here? It's bothers me because it's inflammatory. I think this is unintentional on the part of the media. They really don't comprehend what they're doing. I can't believe they do it intentionally. There is a natural inborn sympathy factor for somebody who's behind the eight ball. There are people who may feel sorry for him. He's only 19. He was influenced by his 26-year-old brother. And so inadvertently, unintentionally, they refer to him as a boy. He's not a boy. He is a man. Now, moving on, let me stay with this Boston bombing thing and tell you how the NRA, you know those people, the National Rifle Association, who don't even want simple background checks to prevent the 30,000 gun killings that happen in the United States every year. They wish to leave open and available the possibility, perhaps the probability, sadly said, of another Newtown where 26-year-olds were shot and killed and six adults. The NRA, the wonderful people who support Second Amendment gun rights, but in reality, in my opinion, are really the tools of gun manufacturers, and they sell their line and breach their line on behalf of the manufacturers. They don't care about the gun holders in this country and their Second Amendment rights. They want to make sure the gun manufacturers in this country, the ammunition manufacturers in this country, can continue selling more and more guns and ammunition and make money. Okay, I learned something this week. There is a gentleman by the name of David Johnston, he wrote in the National Memo on April 20th this week, he wrote in the National Memo, an article how the NRA has already impeded the Boston bomber investigation. And it's very interesting. I'll tell you quite quickly what it's about. I didn't know this, and most of you probably didn't know. About 30 years ago, there was a move underway to identify ammunition. Apparently, there is a method to be able to identify the gunpowder involved. Something is put in the gunpowder. I'm not an expert. I'm only telling you what the article said to me. It's called a tag, T-A-G-G-A-N-T, T-A-G-G-A-N-T. Tag is put in the gunpowder. Now, gunpowder was used. There was gunpowder in the center. I mean, we had an explosion. We had some kind of gunpowder that blew up as part of these bombs, these two bombs, and left over 50 people without a limb or limbs and killed three people. All right? So now, if you put this in the gunpowder, and I don't know how, but that cabinet, which is part and parcel of the gunpowder, identifies the manufacturer of the gunpowder and identifies the retailer of the gunpowder. So within a short period of time, within a matter of hours, once they pick up some leftover pieces of the gunpowder on the ground or whatever was used, they test it, they search out the tag, and they can trace back to who may have bought this. And it works pretty good. It's like we work in food cases. We got bad food. I didn't know this. In some fruits and vegetables we eat, there's a tag in it somewhere associated with that piece of fruit or vegetable. And that tag takes you back to whoever grew it and sold it. You can trace back to who the person was that used it in most cases. And when it comes to cans or bottles that carry bad things and they want to find out who used this can or bottle to commit a crime, there's what we call barcodes. We all know barcodes on the can or bottle, and that's traceable back to the retailer and the manufacturer, and ultimately to the purchaser, the consumer. Well, 30 years ago, they wanted to do this. The Congress of the United States, they had a bill before, we're going to pass a law that with all type stuff. It didn't pass. The NRA opposed it. In fact, it was the first major victory the NRA ever had. They were not a big deal back in the 80s as they are now, but they defeated it. The winners were the manufacturers of guns and gunpowder and all that sort of thing. Bad situation. And it makes it even worse because this David Johnson says, think for a moment. Remember Sean Collier? He's the 26-year-old police officer at MIT who was shot Thursday night. Maybe he would not have been killed. This happened Monday, the bombing. If there were tagnants and they could trace the gunpowder, these guys might have been arrested Tuesday or Wednesday. But by Thursday night, there's a good chance Sean Collier would not be yesterday's news. All right? And that's the story there. I want to, for a moment, talk about the Catholic Church and Cardinal O'Malley. Cardinal O'Malley is a cardinal of Boston, I believe. He was close to becoming Pope recently in the elections they had in Rome. Supposed to be very articulate. He's got a nice way about him. I watched him on television. I enjoy his approach to people. He's very humorous. He's a nice guy. He seems to be like the kind of guy you want to have a bottle of beer with. He spoke in church last Sunday about the Boston bombings in his homily. And then, you know, there comes a time in the Mass where he gives a sermon in his sermon. And he said, we have to forgive, not vengeance. Revenge should not be the way now. Revenge should not be what's in your heart. Forgiveness. I don't agree with him. I'm a Catholic. I'm a fallen-away Catholic, but I'm a Catholic. I can't believe you can forgive something. Remember, Christ, when he was on the cross, he looked up in heaven, to heaven, and he said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. But this Christ on the cross, he was God, talking to God his Father. The people, 170 people injured in Maine, the three dead in Boston, they're not God. They're ordinary people with ordinary feelings. Do you think the Jews during the Holocaust who walked into those concrete places to be poisoned and gassed, the gas chambers, they were, as they were walking in and they knew they were going to die, they said, I forgive the Nazis. I forgive my German captors. Do you think if you or I were the parent of one of these kids who lost a limb or lost a life, we could say, I forgive these two brothers? Hell no, you can't. And vengeance is mine. It's not just the Lord. Revenge is good. It's healthy. If it wasn't good, it wasn't proper, it wasn't healthy, why would there be a death penalty in this country for this kind of crime? After all, you execute somebody, that's revenge. What else can you call it? It is revenge. That's the show for this week. I want to thank you very much for joining me. No one ever called me up with a question. Yet probably 2,000 of you are going to listen to this with the archive and live, but no one called me. I've been called maybe four times totally in the 3 months I've been doing this show. I enjoy hearing myself talk. I would like, though, to have an exchange with some of you occasionally. It could be extremely interesting. Enjoy your week. Keep reading the news. It's very exciting. We live in bad times, dangerous times, and yet they're good times. Six of this and a half a dozen of another. Have a good week. Stay safe.